This episode is brought to you by Aspire Healthy Energy. Find them at aspiredrinks.com. If you're like me, you want energy that actually feels good without the sugar crash or the jittery buzz that comes with most energy drinks. That's why I love Aspire. With 80 milligrams of natural caffeine from green tea and guarana, about half the caffeine of most leading energy drinks, Aspire delivers smooth, steady energy that lasts. No jitters, no crashes. Plus, it's zero sugar and zero calories, and packed with B and C vitamins, biotin, and ginger to support your focus and metabolism. The flavors are seriously good. Mango, lemonade, raspberry, sweet cherry. You'll actually look forward to cracking one open. And here's the best part. I've arranged an exclusive deal for my listeners. You get 20% off your entire order. This is the highest discount out there, and you cannot find it anywhere else. Just go to aspireenergydrinks.com and use my promo code ZEROSIGNAL at checkout, or click the link in the show notes where the discount is applied automatically. That's aspiredrinks.com. Promo code ZEROSIGNAL. Fuel your day the healthier way.
You're tuned into Zero Signal, a show about what they won't say and what you're probably already thinking. No fluff. No filters, no bullshit. Let's crack it open.
At this time, I'm going to ask you to fasten your seatbelt.
Alan, Paul Roberts, thank you so much for coming on Zero Signal. I am stoked that you are on our show. Big fan of your work. I've listened to countless hours of the many podcasts you've been on. So how about before we get too far into our conversation, you tell the audience where they can find you, purchase your book, and maybe some other stuff you got going on.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah. So the easiest way to find me and what I'm up to is just to go to globalcollapsebook.com. Once you're there, you have some links you can use to check out the book. If you like, you can get a signed copy for just about the same price as an unsigned Amazon copy. It's available anywhere online books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, just about anywhere. There's also, if you like ebooks, it comes in ebook. There's also a narrated audiobook, which I narrated myself. So lots of ways to listen to it. The other thing is you can find me on X. Again, if you go to globalcollapsebook.com, scroll to the bottom, you'll get the social media links. And later this month, December 2025, I'm going to be launching my own podcast called The Globalist Plan to Collapse Everything Podcast, coming out. That's a joint venture with iHeartRadio. So if you go to globalcollapsebook.com, I'll be putting the word out there when I'm close, and we're real close.
That's awesome, Alan. I will definitely be a fan and subscriber for sure. I love listening to you talk and present your material. So one thing I did notice about your book, and I'll let you explain to the audience, is that your book is littered with QR codes. So tell the audience what those are, what they do, and what kind of inspired you to throw those in there.
Yeah. So this thing of using QR codes was kind of like an accidental thing. I didn't go into the book thinking I was going to do that. But one day as I was heading out of the house to go to Barnes & Noble to just hang out there and write, which I did a lot during this process to break it up. And anyway, I distinctly remember walking down the sidewalk with my backpack and just this thing in my head, like, how am I going to get across all these videos? It's the best stuff. It's the most persuasive information. And I thought, well, why not just use QR codes? And so I just went on a rant. I have like 175 QR codes in the book. 100 of them are videos. Most of them are short videos. But as far as persuasion goes, you know, the old way was, you know, you have all these footnotes, which nobody's going to check. I mean, I don't think I've checked 3 footnotes in my entire life out of the dozens and dozens of books I've read.
Right.
But with a QR code, you got your phone on you, just hover it over, bang, right to a video. There's the proof, or to a document, so you can, there's some where you can do a deep dive. Mostly they're short videos. And I'll tell you, as far as convincing people, it is so much more convincing to hear some globalist say something in their own words than me just telling you that they said it. So that's what I did. And people love it. I mean, the reaction's been like, how did you ever think of that? I'm like, I don't know. It just came to me, you know?
Yeah, man, that's awesome. I think the biggest problem, and not that what we're talking about is conspiracy. I think it's out there. You know, everyone, you know, it's out there in the media. The governments tell you, these WEF tells you. So this is outside of the realm of conspiracy, in my opinion. But a lot of these people that come on podcasts don't bring the receipts. And I love the fact that you bring the receipts and they're in your book and you can see these things that are said through their own words. So it's not hearsay. It's not reading between the lines. It's presented right in front of you. And I think that's awesome. And I think that's important. So,
and you know, the other cool thing is that makes it easy to share. So you got your phone, you got the link, you can text it to somebody. You know what I mean? It's almost, somebody told me it's almost like a handbook. You know what I mean? It's easy to read, but it's also like something you can go back to and send to other people. You know, you got all right. these links. It's really rich that way.
Yeah, it's almost like an adult pop-up book. You remember when you were kids, you know, it pops up on your phone and you can see it. I think it's really innovative, and I appreciated that. So I know your story because I've listened to you talk so much, but I want you to explain it. You're probably sick of telling it, but what was your inspiration? What triggered you to want to write a book? I know you had a pretty significant professional career before your authorship. What was the motivation?
Yeah. So, you know, like you said, I had a career in the corporate world, which I left in 2011 to start my own marketing firm. And I've never worked as hard in my life as when I work for myself. I mean, you know, you're wearing a bunch of hats, you're doing everything. And even after, you know, it's been since 2011, after all those years, I still feel like I can't get it all done. So in no world imaginable was I planning to write a book. That's my point. But late in April 2024, one Saturday morning around 4 a.m., I woke up. As I said before, no nightmare, no dreams, nothing that I can remember. Just you're waking up like you do every night, right? And laying there for like a half a minute or so in bed, and it was just this experience. The only way I can explain it is just like wham. It was this. Some people call it a download. I just call it an instant knowing. And the reason I call it that is it was completely instant. I mean, there was no time between, there was no time from here to there. It was just like, bang, I was suddenly aware of six pillars of American society that were under the threat of coming down. I knew the six, I knew what they were. They were all there simultaneously. And I just had this knowledge that they're coming down if we don't do something about it. They're being worked on to bring them down, and they're in different phases. This was a kind of bizarre, startling experience. It wasn't scary. It was just extremely matter of fact, but the knowledge was just instantly there. And I was like, whoa. So I got up out of bed. I keep paper and pen in the bathroom. I wrote those six down and like kind of scratching my head. What is going on? What's happening to me? I tried to go back to sleep, lay there for 2-3 minutes, and then three different pillars the same way, just like bang, you know, three of them. And this experience, each time it lasted for maybe half a minute, maybe to a minute and a half. It's really hard to judge that time when you're in that mode. But it wasn't just like, here it is. It was like the light was turned on and it just stayed there. And I wasn't visually seeing it, but I was mentally seeing it, mentally understanding it. And as soon as it like turned off, I got up and I wrote it down again. So there's three more. Try to get back to bed one more time, and then the same thing, two more. And at this point, I practically leap out of bed because, you know, three times is a charm. I'm like, what in the heck? So I go write them down. So now I've got 11. And that's what the book's about, these 11 pillars that are under attack. I call them collapse points. But, you know, I always like to explain, like, how do you make sense of that? And I felt like it had to be a God thing because number one, the information felt like it was coming from outside of me. And there were even some of them where I'm almost like, wow, I never thought of that way. I remember thinking that like, wow, I never saw it that way before. And so that was one reason. But then the other reason is, you know, as I've explained to other people, I have this daily prayer routine every day for at least 20 years. And I mean, almost every single day. There might be 5 days a year where I don't hit this because I'm too busy to do it. But I make a point of starting every day with like a half hour to an hour and a half of prayer. I don't time it. I don't plan it. I have a daily devotional. I read it. I think about it. And then I just start praying, like, you know, kind of like meditating and, you know, talking to God, whatever. And just trying to cooperate with him is the best I can explain it. And so when this happened, it felt familiar. It felt familiar in the sense of like, it felt like it was God, but I've never had anything that dramatic, not even close, nothing, anything like that. But, you know, so that's why I'm like, you know, God, what's going on here? And I'm like, why are you showing me this? Because with the exception of one pillar, none of it's religious in the least bit. You know, it's just like you're watching a newsreel almost. And so I'm like puzzled by why would you be showing this to me? I'm not a news person. I'm not the kind of person who would do anything with this. And I'm thinking, and then finally I'm like, do you want me to write a book? And if you want me to write a book, what's the title? And it was the same thing. Wham. The whole title's there, like in the tiniest fraction of a second you can imagine. I know it from front to back. The globalist plan to collapse everything to usher in a new world order. That whole title was just instantly there. And so because it was so fast and so clear, I felt like, I know I don't have a choice. You showed me this. I'm not going to ask you for some other proof. You know, I'm not going to like, you know, be a jerk and like, okay, now show me one more. It's like, no, you know, this was so clear. It's like, I got to do it. And so I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And then a few minutes later, I'm like, oh my God, what did I just sign up for? How am I going to do this? I'm having butterflies, you know, it's not a panic attack, but it's like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? And I sensed an answer. It was like it was waiting for the question. It was like, write it from the heart and it'll flow. I completely relaxed at that point. It's like a weight was lifted off me and it's like, all right, I'm just going to let it flow. I'm not going to analyze it to death. I'm not going to plan it for a year and write every bullet and sub bullet and all that. I'm going to let it kind of flow. And it did. I wrote the whole thing in 3.5 months, 300 pages, 175 QR codes and illustrations. And I mean, I used every spare minute I could to get it all done, but I was on fire. I wanted to do it. It didn't feel like a burden. It felt a little tedious at times, you know, but I just wanted to do it. It's all I wanted to do. And when it was over, it's almost like a disappointment. Like, what do I do now? And it's like, oh yeah, you got to market it. You got to get the word out. So that's what I've been doing ever since.
So before you had this download, were you interested in this subject? Were you aware of it? Or was this like a new thing that was brought to your conscious?
Yeah, I mean, I was aware of some of the things. I mean, you know, I would listen to podcasts that talk about some of these things kind of like as, I would call it almost like a hobby. It's just something, it was more interesting than the nightly news. I'm also a nightly news junkie. I've always been a news junkie as long as I can remember. I just want to understand things and how the world works and all that. But you know, writing the book took me further down the rabbit hole than I've ever been and into more detail than I ever knew. So like I said, some of these pillars, probably three, maybe four. If you would have asked me and given me a couple hours to think about what are the main things that are the weakest points of society that could collapse society if they failed, you know, definitely the borders, because I was freaked out about the borders and what was going on under Biden with the wide open borders and all these military age people. That for sure. And I was very concerned about the banking system. So those two I would have thought about. But, you know, like I said, there's 11.
So out of the 11, which one was the most surprising and eye-opening for you? I mean, you can go ahead and list the 11 before you answer that question. But
okay.
Which one was that when you looked at it, you were like, wow, I never put that together.
Yeah. Well, okay. So here's the 11. National borders, security and police protection, privacy, banking and finance, education, energy, environment, medical system, food supply, self-identity, and faith. So some of these feel like they're really in danger. And so there's two things, like which one feels like it's coming down first? That'd be one question. But which one surprised you the most? I would say faith surprised me the most, because it doesn't seem like it's in, you know, self-identity and faith. The last two are like unlike the other nine, which are very kind of like news oriented. Self-identity and faith, I wouldn't have thought of them as pillars of society. But the more I thought about it, especially afterward, it makes total sense, because with self-identity, they're really messing with these kids. And what am I? Am I a boy or a girl? I mean, come on, when you went to school, when I went to school, nobody asked that question. You know, that wasn't a thing. But now they're getting them to ask this question about themselves, just shaking them up in terms of not knowing who they are. So that's one. But then faith itself was the biggest surprise. But it makes total sense because the tyrants always go after the people of strong faith first because they're the backbone of society. They're the people who are willing to die for what they believe, and they will provide the most resistance to tyranny is a person of genuine faith who not only wants to do the right thing, but will do it out of love for others, for family, for community, for country. It's the person of like an undying faith, a really rock solid faith that is the biggest threat to tyranny. But I never had thought about it that way until I researched it and wrote about it.
Yeah, you know, the whole faith thing, because, you know, you read the book of Revelation and they, you know, essentially God's telling us that there's going to be a one world religion. And the faith one kind of surprised me too when you brought it up. But, you know, it's funny, like the deeper you get into these conspiracy holes, the more it kind of points back to like spiritual forces on the back end. And, you know, just through a lot of the podcasts we've done and a lot of the research, it seems like this whole age theosophic religion movement is becoming pretty popular. And yeah. And I mean, I want your opinion, but I look at it and it seems like a way for them to take all major religions and kind of fold them into one. But in what way do you think, particularly the Christian faith, how do you think they're attacking and leveraging that?
Well, I mean, it's been going on for decades. You know, it's very subtle. But the main thing is to discredit it and make it seem unimportant. If you think about, you know, I go back longer than you do, but, you know, if I go back to TV shows in the 70s and 80s, there was this gradual move away from traditional moral principles. It basically was tearing down the authority within the family, the authority of the father figure, you know, the authority of God in the sense of following, let's say, the Ten Commandments, the teachings of the New Testament. It's like they're made to feel optional, you know, between the TV shows, the sitcoms, the music, the movies. I mean, just pop culture in general moves us further and further away from that to where it's weak. There's very few people that have a really strong conviction unless they really kind of separate that, like they're aware of it. They're aware of it. And they're, you know, making sure their kids are being raised away from, you know, too much TV, too much pop culture. But I think it's really the pop culture itself that's been used. And I don't think it's an accident. I mean, I'm sure in some cases it is, but I think overall, I do think it has been a push to basically break people from their faith and to weaken it with a foreknowledge, knowing. Again, tyrants have been doing this all through history. It's not a new thing. You know, Soviet Union was awful when it came to that, you know, what they did to people of faith. Same thing in China today, North Korea. You know, pick your communist country, and also all through some parts of Africa. The Christians are under, you know, terrible persecution. But yeah, I think it's a plan.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting because it seems like a lot of this, and I think you make this point as well, it seems like a lot of it is geared toward Western culture. All these pillars, it seems like it's hitting the Western world 100 times worse than it's hitting any other part of the world. And on top of that, it seems like Christianity, they always try to marginalize them. They try to make you seem like you're kooky or crazy if you believe in Christ or want to talk about Christ, but all the other religions, it's fine. They kind of use kid gloves when they address it. So, you know, I think that's interesting. And I mean, honestly, I think Christianity, you know, instills those moral values, and I think it instills independence from the system. And I think that's a problem for the globalists and the elitists. And you know, going back to your self-identity, that seems like it kind of popped up out of nowhere in the past, let's call it less than a decade.
Yeah. You know, well, it came in under Obama really heavy, that this is where it really, really took root, because he went after the states, saying, if you don't open up all the bathrooms to, you know, whatever sex somebody thinks they are, you're going to lose federal funding. That came down like a hammer. And I remember, because nobody really was talking about where'd this come from, but I do remember Donald Trump early on saying, this was never a thing. Like, where's this coming from? He asked the question. I remember it. But I haven't heard anyone else ask the question, but until you did, it's like, yeah, where did this come from? Like, from out of nowhere, you know, which proves it's a top-down thing, not a grassroots thing. I didn't hear any people clamoring for this, you know,
not
to this
all.
Day. Who's clamoring for it? It's always the government coming down like a hammer, trying to force it.
Right. And, you know, and I think this kind of points back, I mean, I guess it's the same two buckets, faith and self-identity. And I've heard you tell stories, especially out in the UK, you can't pray around abortion clinics. Not only do you not have freedom of speech, now you don't even have freedom of self-thought or self-prayer.
Yeah, thought police.
It's bizarre. And, you know, even with this, listen, I judge no one. If you live the life you want to live, as long as you, I don't think it should be promoted, but I'm not here to judge you. But this whole self-identity thing, when you listen to the arguments, they're so illogical that you can't even, I don't even know how to make sense of them. I don't know where it came from, and it doesn't even pass the logic test in 100% of the cases.
Yeah, and the self-identity, even though in the book, I get into a couple things. I get into am I a boy or a girl, that part of self-identity, the sexual identity. But I also do get into the attack on just manhood, you know, fatherhood and motherhood, you know. So it's not only what am I, but what does it even mean? You know, when a Supreme Court nominee can't answer the question, what is a woman? Without sounding like, you know, she's trying to dodge the question. You know, well, I'm not, what did she say? I'm not a biologist.
Yeah.
And I heard someone else say, you know, I'm not a veterinarian, but I sure as hell know what a dog is. You know what I mean? And you know what I mean? It's obvious. You don't have to be a biologist to know what a woman is. You don't have to be a veterinarian to know what a dog or a cat is. It's just so outrageous. But it just shows how on the same page some of these people are. I mean, she should be ashamed of herself for dodging a question like that, you know?
Oh, absolutely. So out of your 11 pillars, which one do you think is the closest to collapse, complete and total collapse?
Yeah, well, if you'd asked me that question 4 years ago, it would have been national borders. But now that the southern border, at least of the U.S., is sealed pretty much, without a doubt, I would say banking and finance. And I watch that one closely. The more news I hear, the worse it sounds, the more it concerns me. I mean, if you look at just some of the fundamentals, the U.S. national debt has been off to the races since the COVID crisis. Now I could understand back then, you know, because there was a lockdown, they had to do something in terms of loans and everything to keep businesses from going under, to keep people from, you know, financial ruin, you know, not able to pay their mortgages. I mean, I hated that whole lockdown scenario, but if someone truly believed, if the government was tricked into believing it or whatever, but if they believed that, you know, a lockdown country was going to lead to financial collapse, then you got to put out some money to stop that from happening. The problem is they kept at that pace through the whole Biden administration, and the Trump administration isn't doing any better as far as I can see. The big, beautiful bill is, you know, it's spending a ton of money. Nobody seems really concerned with getting the national debt under control. And so that is one huge alarm. But beyond that, the banking system itself to me looks like they are intentionally playing with the interest rates, the Fed is, in a way that is intentionally making the system unstable. And the reason I say that is if anyone was really paying attention to, you know, we had at least a decade, maybe longer, of near zero interest rates. And then all of a sudden, a little over a year ago, the Fed starts cranking those rates up to like 5%, like really rapidly. And then in the meantime, all these banks all over the country that had bought all these treasury bills and treasury notes with their, they parked their money in treasury bills and treasury, and it's supposed to be the safest investment you can make, but they were only paying 1%, maybe 3% if they were really old. And then the Fed cranks the rate up to 5%. So the new Treasury bills and notes are worth double, triple, five times what the old ones were. So when people start pulling money out of the banks and the bank has to cash in their Treasury bills and Treasury notes, they're worth a fraction of what they were. They're selling them for less than what they paid for them to get the cash to pay depositors who are pulling money. So if there's even the slightest run on the banks, even a small one, you know, we saw Silicon Valley Bank go under, you know, a little over a year ago. And there were two more that went, which were as big as the whole 2008 banking crisis, just these three banks alone. And, you know, that's basically what happened. They were underwater. People started pulling their money and it started coming down like a house of cards. Now, the FDIC stepped in. But that they say that nearly wiped out the FDIC. I mean, if that were to happen again or to happen on a double or three times the scale, there would be no money. It doesn't matter that they say you're covered up to 250. You're covered up to 250 if you're one of the ones who gets the money before, you know, the music stops. So, yeah, that one really concerns me a lot. I think it's very shaky, much more dangerous than people realize.
So in your opinion, do you think this is being done intentionally to usher in a new currency?
I do. I think it's being done to weaken the system, which will result, the way I see it unfolding, if the banks start going, they're going to go like a house of cards, and only the too big to fails will be saved. And so you've got thousands of banks, regional banks all over the country that are the main lenders to this, medium-sized businesses. You know, the guy that starts a factory, person that starts a franchise or whatever, these are your regional banks for the most part. And so, you know, they've got all these mortgages, commercial real estate, where nobody's in these offices anymore. So they're not getting the mortgage money back. The banks aren't getting back the full value of these mortgages. So, you know, they're underwater on most of these. And these are the banks that are in danger of coming down. But if it comes down, you're going to have about five or six too big to fails that will scoop up all the banks. And then once you have five or six banks controlling the whole American U.S. economy, then that'll be the perfect time to introduce a central bank digital currency or a digital currency that is run by these handful of banks. But that's an easy precursor to then a central bank, a Federal Reserve digital currency, and then those central banks having their digital currencies would then be the precursor to the one world digital currency. So I think that's the long-term plan, is to get to a one world digital currency tied to an ID, so that they can basically do what they're already doing in China. You know, you got your digital ID, you got your currency, and you've got your social credit score. You know, that triad together controls your rights, what you can do, where you can travel, what kind of job you can get, what kind of job your kids can get. And, you know, I think that that's what the globalists are hoping for. Hopefully, you know, we can get enough awareness and pushback going in the U.S. that we can stop that. And if the U.S. is a successful model, that makes it easier to have successful pushback in other countries. You know, just like when DeSantis put the lie to the whole thing that you had to wear masks, you had to lock down. He said, the hell with that. You know, everybody's out in the sun. And even though you have an aging population, they're faring no worse than the average state that's locked down. He put the lie to it. And as soon as people realized that, then there was pressure on other states to do the same. I think that same principle can happen if the U.S. can be successful in not going along with this whole thing, if we can hold it off, other nations who are on that path, like Canada and in the U.K., maybe they can, you know, come back from it too.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of talk over the past decade or so about cryptocurrency. What role do you think cryptocurrency plays in this new one world currency or the aftermath of a possible banking collapse?
I think crypto, just like gold and silver, precious metals, is an alternative, potentially. And I think any alternative is a good thing. Any system that's outside of the central bank control, to me, is a good thing. So I like crypto. I personally don't own it, but if I did, I would probably get a privacy crypto like Monero. That is totally anonymous, because I think being anonymous is really important in a way that it didn't used to be. So, you know, cash is somewhat anonymous, pretty much anonymous, except for I heard recently that someone paid for something at Walmart with cash, did no internet searches before they bought the thing at Walmart, just knew what they wanted, went in, bought it, all of a sudden started getting ads for that thing.
Wow.
And they said, oh my gosh, it's facial recognition. There's wow. facial recognition in Walmart that's linking to you even though you paid cash. That was their conclusion. And I think that's probably true. It wouldn't surprise me. You know, a big chain like Walmart, I think they would be up for that kind of tech.
Absolutely. And at the self-checkouts, they have the cameras there. They can see you, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm sure they have access to everything that's in your pocket. Yeah, you know, I often wonder about cryptocurrency. You know, I've been reading some articles about assets being tokenized on the blockchain, and even about identity, a way to protect your identity being tokenized on the blockchain. And, you know, in my mind, and I'd love to have your opinion, it almost seems like they're trying to digitize everything on the chain as a way, maybe as a precursor to make you unable to buy, sell, or trade in the future. It's just, you know, they, in my opinion, they sell it like it's private. And I'm sure, you know, some blockchains are more secure than others, but I ultimately think whoever's at the top can look through the transactions. They know you're buying crypto on Coinbase, and, you know, they can see your wallet ID. They can see who it's tied to and see who you're transferring it to. I ultimately just think it's almost the final step in control of the currency in the long run.
Yeah, I agree. I don't buy the, you know, we want to make things secure for you argument. I think the real goal is we want to know everything you're doing so we can control you and keep tabs on you, which is consistent with everything we're seeing. I mean, you know, it's, you know, we came out of COVID and all of a sudden there were cameras on every corner and, you know, there was 5G towers everywhere too. I mean, we went into the lockdown. They pretty much weren't there. We came out of the lockdown. They're everywhere. And I think that's just kind of like a symbolic, if you want to call it, an indicator of their desire to track and trace and to get that system in place. But that is what concerns me. And, you know, in the book, we talk about the next step after the central bank digital currency is that system that you're talking about, the unified ledger. So the unified ledger, yeah, is this desire to digitize absolutely every asset in the world, right down to the chickens you have in your backyard, for gosh sakes, you know. But they really do want to put an ID on everything and a value. And the idea would be that because it's all digital, there's no paper anymore that's used to verify anything. So if you have the copy of the paper deed to your house, that doesn't mean anything because the real proof is the digital version. But the problem is anything digital can be stolen, can be turned off, can be manipulated. And to me, that's the really concerning thing about it. I don't want my local government relying on the digital version of the deed to my house. I want the paper deed to be the proof, you know? So, that's really concerning.
Yeah, and I think we saw some of that during COVID where people were debanked or demonetized, especially people on social media, just because the government didn't like the narrative. And
sure.
You know, once everything's digitized, then they lock you out. I mean, how are you going to eat? And I think that's terrifying. What do you make of BRICS? I know BRICS is forming their own, I guess, international type gold-backed currency. And in my opinion, all wars are bankers' wars, currency wars, or resource wars. I think terrorism and anything else that you hear about is just a way to sell it. Do you see a potential for that BRICS bloc and the United States and other Western countries possibly getting into a war just to prevent another alternative currency so the American dollar doesn't lose its position as the global marker?
Yeah, I mean, I think the potential's there for war. I don't think it's going to come to that. What I see is more a move to what they call a multipolar world. At least if the Trump admin, with the things they've been signaling, including Marco Rubio, talked about, you know, now we're in a multipolar world instead of a unipolar world where the U.S. managed everything. And just recently, the Trump administration came out with a new document kind of explaining those principles, that we're going to focus on our hemisphere. We're not going to be the policemen of the world anymore. So to me, that makes it seem as if we're less threatened by war than we would have been otherwise up until this point. But I do think the U.S. losing its reserve currency status because BRICS is coming on board, and because Saudi Arabia no longer uniquely sells oil in dollars. So we don't have that petrodollar advantage that we had up until a year or two ago. We no longer have that. They're selling it in every currency now. And because BRICS is coming on board, you know, it was coming on board even before Biden pulled the rug out from under Russia and said your $300 billion of money in the bank is now frozen. You know, the U.S., NATO, basically the West, locked Russia's money out, you know, once they invaded Ukraine. That certainly accelerated the motivation to get BRICS online. I mean, we've done this to ourselves. The United States sent a signal to the entire world that if we don't like what you're doing, we will freeze your assets, and therefore we're no longer a trusted reserve currency. We will come down and use our leverage to harm you if we want to. And so I think that just threw the gasoline on the fire for the effort to develop an alternative system, you know, to the banking system that we have that's been in place for so many years, you know, that basically the Western world has relied on. Well, Russia, China, India, you know, Brazil, and they say 50, 60, 70 nations or more are signing up for BRICS. They want to be on that system because they feel like it's safer than being on the dollar, being, you know, dollar denominated. I can't blame them, but, you know, I don't know why we had to do that. You know, I think what Biden did in that move was really short-sighted.
Yeah, I totally agree. So what other pillar, you mentioned, obviously, we just spent some time talking about the banking system. So you want to move on to the borders?
Sure. Yeah. The borders are the one that, you know, we are paying the price for that now. If you think about how many people are in this country that shouldn't have been let in without being vetted. I mean, they came in unvetted. Nobody can deny this. And, you know, they say, oh, we've heard people say, yeah, they were vetted. They weren't vetted. You know, their name was taken, maybe, and they were given a ticket to go fly somewhere. They might have got their fingerprints, but they didn't vet them in the sense of, should you be here or shouldn't you be here? You know, to me, vetting includes, do you have a job? Are you just going to be a burden on society? Do you have someone who's supporting you? Or are you just coming in and we're paying for everything? Which that was the Biden administration. Come on in, free hotel, free food. We'll put you up in a 5-star hotel in New York. We'll give you a cell phone. And we'll give you everything. And, you know, and they're doing the same thing in UK. They're doing the same exact thing in Australia. They're doing the same thing in many Western European countries, you know, Ireland. I mean, everybody's complaining about this. But of course, the heads of the governments, they don't care. They want it this way because it's a plan. But I mean, you know, they say now the real threat in the U.S. is the northern border, the Canadian border, that's where people are coming through. And, but, you know, I think the thing is, yeah, they're starting with trying to get out the worst of the worst, which obviously they have to do. But let's face it, I mean, we got millions and millions of people on welfare who shouldn't be draining the system, shouldn't be clogging up the hospital system, shouldn't be messing up the school system. And that's what's going on. I mean, thank God we shut off the flow, at least on the southern border. But we still have a heck of a problem that we're dealing with. But you know, in Western Europe, they're dealing with a lot more. Same again in Australia.
So what are you hearing about the northern border? Like what group is coming over? Is it, I mean, I doubt it's Hispanics unless somehow they fly to Canada and they enter from the north, or what do you?
Yeah, it's nothing like the flow we had coming in from the southern border, but I've heard several people say that it is coming down from the northern border. I heard, and this, I want to verify this. I haven't verified it yet, but I have heard it more than one time, but I hadn't heard the number. I've heard that there's as many as 500,000 Chinese troops in Canada.
Interesting. And
that, yeah, that is crazy. I mean, that's, I don't know how big the whole U.S. Army is, but it can't be much bigger than 500,000, I wouldn't think. So they got 500,000 potentially. But I think, yeah, I think people from China are probably coming down through there, possibly other, you know, other countries as well. I got to get the details on that, but I've heard it several times,
yeah,
including from people in Canada. So,
yeah, I heard some story maybe a year ago, it was back when Trudeau was in office, that they were allowing Chinese military bases to set up and operate there.
Yes.
And then, and I don't know if this is in America or Canada, but they were allowing Chinese police stations, not necessarily to police Canadians or Americans, but to police the local Chinese, which is just mind blowing to me. It's almost, you think of Rome and them setting up their conclaves in certain in Germanic areas. It almost kind of harkens back to that a bit. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So in your opinion, why, I mean, just mass immigration doesn't make any sort of economic or social sense to me. And I think anyone who can be honest about it would come to the same conclusion. I mean, it leads to inflation, it leads to housing and rental shortages. I mean, it just leads to so many problems that you mentioned the medical system. Why do you think that they're allowing it and wanting it to happen?
Well, I think it's part of the planned takedown of the country and of the Western world. I mean, if you can basically make your borders meaningless and have people from every country and nationality just streaming across it unchecked, then pretty soon you start to lose your national identity. You lose your sense of security, the sense of identity of who you are. Like, what does it mean to be an American? I mean, it used to mean we kind of share a set of core values. Yeah, we're from all these different countries. But in the past, we had assimilated. You know, you came through Ellis Island, you went through the process, you learned what America's about, for example. And so there was a common set of beliefs, a pretty standard set of beliefs. Yeah, there are always the outliers, there are always the people who don't care about the country. There's always some who are trying to cause trouble. But the ratio of it is unlike anything we've seen in the past. And you know, so if you can erase the sense of a border, if in reality you really don't have a border because anybody can come over, that's a line on the map. That's not a border, right? So, but if you, to the extent you can have that, then you lose your national identity. That takes you one big step closer to accepting a world identity. I'm a citizen of the world. I'm no longer a citizen of a country. And so you can get closer to that one world order, that one world government, that one world control that you don't have when you have truly independent nations.
No, I agree. It's, you know, it's really scary when the majority of the people coming here are military aged men. That's the scary part. It's not women. Yeah. It's not children. It's not families. I mean, I'm all for immigration, legal immigration, like you said, that are vetted, that have some sort of job or sponsorship lined up. But, you know, I'm sure we've all heard the arguments about importing a voting bloc. I'm not even sure if you boil it all down to its base. And I agree with you. I don't think that, I mean, I think it helps. I think it's a point of leverage, but I don't think it's ultimately the reason they do it. And I agree with you that it's to just homogenize culture into something that's just undescribable to anyone who lives in America. But, you know, the other system, you know, I'm sitting here looking at your 11 points, and the one I think that's completely destroyed, and I think it's already fallen, is education. What are your opinions on that?
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, my gosh, when you I think we all nearly had a heart attack when we saw what our kids were learning, you know, during COVID, when they were having to go to school remotely and seeing the, there were two things. Like, they weren't learning reading, writing, math, and science, but what they were getting is a bunch of brainwashing and like squishy stuff, like that are about feelings and about, you know, injustices and all this, you know. It's that was an eye opener. And I think, you know, I've read that there was such a dramatic spike in homeschooling after that. I mean, a lot of parents got motivation they never had before once they saw what was going on. But I mean, it's been going on for decades. In the book, there's a QR code that takes you to an interview with Diane Reams, where she interviews Thomas Sowell, a really highly educated Black man who grew up in Harlem. Talked about this on other podcasts, but yeah, in his day in Harlem, he claims that he got a better education than his daughter, who's going to a private school, an expensive private school, was getting. And he meant far better too. And, you know, so this interview was in the 80s. He, you know, he was probably at this point in his 50s. So I guess we could calculate his age, but there was a time when inner city Harlem had quality education. You know, and it's just kind of mind blowing when you think about that. And, you know, I know my experience. Now, I went to private school, not private. I went to a Catholic school, right? And you know, my parents spent a lot of money for that. And that, honestly, when I look back at it, that education really wasn't very good. I was not working hard. I was coasting. My friends were coasting. I was getting A's and B's and occasional C. I wasn't pushing myself at all, you know, and that's even in that kind of school, let alone the typical public school system.
Yeah, no, my kids were in middle school when the whole COVID thing went down. And, you know, even something like math, the way they teach basic math is a lot different than I remember. I don't know if you have kids or how, I mean, it's irrelevant, but it was like, the way that they did simple math was mind blowing to me. I'm like, this is the easy way to do it. Why are we doing some sort of weird algebraic equation, you know?
yeah. You got to wonder. And I've heard that, you know, that's really had an impact on society. Somebody was talking about a news reporter who was throwing out numbers, and the numbers were off by like orders of magnitude. Like it'd be like millions versus billions.
Wow.
You know, when you say billions, but you mean millions, I mean, that's 1,000 times, right? The difference. And, but people don't know math, so they can't recognize when something doesn't make sense mathematically. I mean, what did Joe Biden say? We had, he quoted the U.S. population in the billions, but I think by that point, nobody expected him to know what was going on anyway, though. But, you know, it's just, yeah, I mean, we don't have the math sense that we used to. They're not teaching it like they used to at all.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Joe Biden, you know, I'm a believer in, you can agree or disagree, but I'm a believer that, you know, I hate the fact that we're given a binary choice every 4 years. I almost think both parties ultimately serve the same master. I mean, I think Trump might be an exception to the rule. I think that's probably one reason he's so hated. But I mean, I could argue the other side of that too. You know, like when I see these like troops being deployed and the National Guard being deployed in certain cities to round up immigrants, I'm for that. But the thing that really scares me is inevitably we're going to have another leftist administration, maybe in the next 4 years, maybe in the next 8, but ultimately it's going to come back around. It scares me because I think one party sets the precedence, and then in turn, when the other party gets into office, they keep that precedence, but they flip it to the other side. And that's the part that really scares me. When do you see, in your opinion, that all these pillars eventually collapse? I've heard you mention 2030. Is that still kind of what you're thinking? You think this agenda is going to be complete by 2030? I know a lot of things can happen in, you know, 4 years, but what does your research tell you?
I mean, I think they're going for 2030. I don't know that they're going to achieve it. I mean, believe it or not, I'll call it semi-optimistic that we can actually stop this. I mean, just the fact of how this instant knowledge came to me gives me some hope that there's a reason for it. You know what I mean? And I know that's like, okay, that's, you could say that's a religious belief, but to me, it's also a common sense thing, because my sense is that you're not given something just so that you know how bad it's going to turn out. I think you're given knowledge to do something with it. And I believe we're meant to push back. I mean, my goal, my hope is that whether it's through book sales or podcasts or just however the word gets out there, that people's eyes start to get opened on these 11 pillars, that, you know, these 11 things that are being really focused on to bring this country down and other Western countries, that they'll, that knowledge alone will help push it back and stop it from happening. My hope is that it doesn't happen. So I'm not like, okay, it's going to happen by a certain date, but I'm recognizing that the globalists have given dates and they're serious about those dates. And I actually think that we've tripped them up in this country, in the United States. I think the first Trump administration put the brakes on. I think this one's putting the brakes on even harder. And that's why he's so hated. I mean, that's why. It's not his style. And people need to get beyond that. I mean, I don't like his style. It's irritating, right? But I like a lot of the policies. It comes down to policy, right? So, yeah, you can say some policies sound horrible. The things on AI scare the crap out of me. You know, like this AI race, I would be okay with it if we could just withdraw all the surveillance stuff. Like somebody go in there and make laws that you can't use it to surveil. And I would probably be okay with it. You know, I know that they've come out with some things. We'll never have a central bank digital currency, but then they've got other things that sound like they're pretty similar to it. So I have no comfort level with anything related to AI that's tied to surveillance, right? So I don't like that. So it's not every policy, but a lot of the policies, like the immigration policy is huge. Closing that border is enormous. That's a kick in the teeth to the New World Order. I mean, the stuff they were doing with all these PCR tests on the chickens, and the, I know there's a chapter in the book on millions and millions of chickens that were basically taken offline, if I could use a technical, you know, term. They're slaughtering all these chickens. The egg production's way down. The price of eggs is up to $8 or $9 a dozen in some cases. You know, the Trump admin came in and said, no, it's over. No more of that. And the supply comes back, the prices go down. So that's an anti-New World Order thing. You know, they want to crush the food supply. They want to make everybody desperate so they can manipulate them. I mean, they're taking farms offline in Europe like crazy. And they've taken a lot of them offline here, too, with Bill Gates and his 70 million acres of farmland that he's bought up. So, yeah, I mean, there's stuff happening. But what I see is policies that are designed to push back against a lot of this stuff. I mean, you look at the fentanyl overdoses that we've had and the effort. I mean, it's been more than a Vietnam War every single year. I mean, Vietnam was 50,000 to 60,000. We lose over that every single year in this country to fentanyl. And finally, somebody's doing a war on drugs. I mean, a real war on drugs. So that's good. So I'm like, you know, I know a lot of people are black-pilled on everything. They think there's no hope for anything. And they have suspicions about every single thing. It's like, you know what? I can't get in somebody's head, but I will celebrate every positive mood, because we need to celebrate every positive move, because we need to celebrate it. We need to celebrate the victories. We need to acknowledge them. We need to, you know, speak up about them to encourage more, and so that we don't lose heart and think that there's no way to stop this train. We got to stop this train. But, you know, have courage, celebrate your victories, be vocal about when things are going the wrong way. What can we do to stop it? Not just bitch and moan about it, but what can we do to stop it, right? So I have hope. I don't think there's a date certain. I do think the New World Order folks are pushing for 2030. We'll see how far they get, but we got to push back and wake people up.
Yeah, you know, I'm hopeful. Like, I mean, inevitably the Book of Revelation is going to happen. I think God is very kind and very forgiving. And I often think of the Book of Jonah, right? Jonah goes to Nineveh and preaches repentance. He gets ticked off because they repent, and destruction is delayed. I do agree with you. I think if we repent, do the right things, that God will delay the inevitable. But it concerns me because there are so many people black-pilled, and this country is so divided. I mean, I I mean, I grew up in the 90s and I don't remember politics even being 10% as bad.
No, no. And you know why? It's because it's because I believe that Trump's policies are diametrically opposed, many of them, to the New World Order goals. That is why you've never seen anything like this, because they have had almost everybody in their pocket until now. You know, it was, you had George Bush, supposedly a Republican, supposedly a conservative. And then we have all the stuff around 9/11 and the surveillance state that got introduced, you know, and everybody fell for it because it was tied to 9/11. And yeah, we got to do something about these terrorists. We have to, you know, scoop up the phone calls that are coming in from out of the country. And it was really just a big setup to scoop up everything on everybody. You know, it was a step toward that. So they've had people in their pocket the whole time. I mean, I think if people will step back from the black pill thing and take an honest look and say, who in the history of your lifetime has ever had the kind of incoming that Trump has taken? All the court cases, you know, what, 81 felonies supposedly, or 91, I don't remember anymore, you know, and, you know, coming in from Georgia, coming in from all over the country, people trying to get him in one way or another, trying to take him off the ballot, going after his family. I mean, trying to imprison him. I mean, shooting at him twice. You know what I mean? And then, you know, some people just think, oh, that's all fake. No, because they don't do that to their own. There is not one other person. There is not one person on the left side that comes one-tenth of the way. And it's not Hillary Clinton, just because Comey, you know, did one thing that she's complaining cost her the election. That is nothing compared to what the fire that Trump's been under. And look at the people in the Trump admin who have gone to jail for him. You know, Steve Bannon, with Navarro, and other people in his orbit that have gone to jail because they wouldn't cave and frame Trump, which is what they were after. I mean, look at the all the court stuff, the fake impeachments, two of them, and the way that they surveilled his team, you know, for years surveilled his team. They haven't done that to anyone on the left. So I look at the amount of fire, the amount of heat, the amount of pain he's gone under, and I say it's because he is against many of their policies. Now he's got people on their team. He's got people on his team that I think are working against him and trying to, you know, get some of these leftist policies in. So it's not like it's perfect, but it's infinitely better than if we would have had Kamala Harris in there extending, you know, Joe Biden's 4 years, which are an extension of Obama's 8, in my opinion. I mean, we'd have been heading for the cliff and over it. We'd be on our way down right now, I think.
Yeah. And I think this is a good transition into the medical system. You know, I think the one silver lining of the COVID pandemic was the fact that I think it woke a lot of people up. They saw a lot of inconsistencies. And, you know, I have dual opinions on the internet. I try not to be blackpilled, but I think the internet is a great way. I mean, you've seen podcasts blow up. I don't really listen to I don't watch the mainstream news anymore because I feel like it's just state run. I get all my news from guys like you or another podcast. And I think that's the beautiful thing about having the internet. I think it's a matter of time until they lock it down, but I still think we're probably a decade or maybe hopefully two away from that. But let's talk about the medical establishment and how that's degraded over the, I mean, again, I think most of this has happened over the past decade and it's happened fairly quickly.
Yeah, it really ramped up with the whole COVID thing. That opened everybody's eyes to basically the lie of Western medicine. And can we rely on these people who are, you know, who we held in such high esteem to be watching out for us and doing things in our best interest? I mean, I was horrified when I learned that the degree to which these hospitals were incentivized to classify the flu and anything like it as COVID, and the money they were getting, you know, to classify things as COVID, and the, you know, the additional backing they got when they put people on ventilators and things like this. and how consistent that was all across the Western world. I read an article that converted it into local currencies like in Australia, Canada, Western Europe, and the incentives were very uniform across the Western world to classify things as COVID. I mean, magically, the flu went away that year, and COVID came in, and it was almost the same numbers initially, you know, until the shots got ramped up. And then when the shots ramped up, there's an article, a big, huge study that was done for Australia and the Southern Hemisphere that shows a direct correlation. I mean, like running in parallel, the booster shots and the change in all-cause mortality. I mean, they just track very closely, very tightly. And that was a very thorough thing. So I think our faith in the medical system since then has been just like totally shaken. But I think it really goes back to John D. Rockefeller and what I call in the book, the birth of the Western medical industry, which is all pharma-based. Because at that point, the other forms of medicine were basically halted when he successfully brought in the pharma system, which conveniently was tied to his oil industry. Now, he was the biggest oil tycoon in history. And almost every pharma product is petroleum-based. I didn't know that till I did the research. It's like, are you kidding me? Yeah, I mean, it's all petroleum-based. And it goes back to that. And, you know, basically the system they implemented was a pill for an ill. So instead of like, you know, alternative medicine, which is like, let's understand what's going on in the body and let's strengthen the body so it can use its natural defenses to bring an end to the sickness. Instead of that, you know, we put a Band-Aid on the symptom with a pill and we're not really making the body healthy. So, it goes way back to the early 1900s.
And correct me if I'm wrong, he had a heavy hand in the educational system in the United States as well, didn't he?
He did, yeah. So it's the medical schools. He had an impact on the medical schools in a huge way. Basically, he worked with somebody who was able to introduce a bill in Congress that went through that pretty much, in effect, really outlawed the other forms of medicine in a practical sense. I mean, not 100%, but it was so thorough that there were virtually no medical schools anymore that were the old type medicine, the traditional medicine up to that point. It all became, the new method. The only way to get certified was through the American Medical Association instead of the other half dozen that existed separately from that prior. And yeah, so now, I can't remember ever going to the doctor and the doctor saying, you know what, you ought to take this or that vitamin, you ought to take this or that mineral. No, it's like, you know, here's the pharma thing. And by the way, you can buy it on the way out the door. Don't forget to stop by the front desk and get your prescription filled. I mean, it's this prescription pharma industry based medicine. So clear.
Right. And they rarely talk about your diet. I mean, I think a lot of the food, the food quality, again, I keep tossing out this term the past decade, but the food quality seems to have plummeted.
Yeah.
It's, you know, everything is, it's got so many chemicals you can't produce or you can't pronounce. It's just you can go to Europe and there's stuff that we have in our food system that they don't have there. I've heard so many, I mean, they're anecdotal, but people say they go to Europe, they eat food, they're not bloated, they feel better. They come back to America. Next thing you know, like they're feeling bloated, ill and gross. And it's all junk. And not only that, it's expensive. I don't know about you. And ever since COVID, it seems like the price of food, you can't go out and eat a meal for you and your wife, and God forbid you take your kids for under $100 in some cases.
Oh, I know. I work, you know, it didn't used to be that you really thought about, should I just get water to drink, you know? Because I'll save $3 or $4 on a soda, let alone, you know, a beer is like, I mean, when did beer all of a sudden become $8 a glass? I mean, it's
right.
Like nuts.
It is nuts. Oh man, I got one more question for you. How you doing on time? You good?
I'm okay, sure.
Okay. I'll ask you one more question and then we'll wrap it up. So In your opinion, who do you think's at the top of this pyramid? Do you think it's a spiritual thing? Do you think it's just a series of coincidences? You think it's one man at up top or spreading this down? Yeah, I mean, I know you can watch news broadcasts and it doesn't matter the story. It's almost, and I'm sure you've seen them, where each news broadcaster from each state is reading the same exact script. So it's coming from somewhere. Yeah. Where do you think it's coming from? Or what do you think the source is?
Yeah, well, there's a chapter in the book about that. It's called Who Owns the World? And I say in the book, if you're only going to read one video or watch one video, watch this one. I think it's almost an hour long, but it goes through a series of YouTube searches and they keep rolling up to who owns this company, who owns that company. By the time you're done, you realize there's a handful of companies that have controlling interest in just about every country. At the end, it comes down to, you know, Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street. And in the end, you see that Vanguard actually has controlling interest over everything. I mean, it really all rolls up to Vanguard. And then Vanguard's organized in such a way that you're not allowed to know who owns Vanguard. It's the way their policies are written. We won't divulge. So the question is, who owns Vanguard? Because whoever owns Vanguard owns the world. And I know Vanguard has individual stockholders, but who has the controlling interest over Vanguard? You know, these are probably trillionaire families, you know, the banking families, you know, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the names we've all heard, I suspect, are the ones that really have the control. You know, Elon Musk isn't the richest man in the world. There's people way richer than him, in my opinion. And these are the ones that really control it. But so, you know, I don't pretend to know exactly who these people are, but their control is vast. And to me, it comes down to the highest level systems. These are, number one, the banking system, the people in, you know, the banking families. Money is power. Money is the power to manipulate, to reward, to crush competition, to do all kinds of things, good or evil, right? But it's money is control. Beyond that, it's the large corporations. Those are aligned with the World Economic Forum. That's a major power in the world. The World Economic Forum influences the United Nations. That's another major building block. And then you add to that the governments and who's in power in the governments. You know, we see how unified these governments are in doing the same thing and being a part of the World Economic Forum, being a part of the UN. They're all building blocks within the same network, and they're unified. Their influence, you know, like Klaus Schwab claiming they had you know, penetrated the cabinets of, I think, over 50% of the countries in the world, as he said, penetrated the cabinets. So he's bragging about the amount of control they have just through the World Economic Forum. So, you know, and then you get the spy agencies, you know, the CIA, MI6, the different, you know, Israel spy agency. You know, these are the centers of control. But I believe they're, for the most part, historically, they've worked in tandem. And, you know, ultimately, if we want to get to a spiritual sense, I do believe in that there is the power of evil, and that evil is manipulative and evil is deceptive. And these people themselves are deceived, even though they don't realize that. They think they've, you know, got, let's say, a deal with the devil. Some of them maybe think that they are directly cooperating with who they think is their God, you know, they're Satanists, some of them. But I think ultimately in the end, they're going to realize one day that they've been deceived by the greatest deceiver that there is, you know, in this universe. And, you know, that's Satan himself. So they're deceived. And the problem is they have a lot of money, a lot of power, a lot of control to, you know, to execute their plan. But, you know, in the end, good wins. We know that from the Bible, from the book of Revelation. But I think we also know it in our hearts. And we're all called upon, I believe, to be people of courage, to not lose heart. And I'll say it again, we're not allowed to be black-pilled. So if anybody's feeling black-pilled, you know, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Moonstruck, where Cher slaps this guy and says, snap out of it. So if you're black-pilled, snap out of it. And, you know, get behind people who are trying to move the ball forward to do some good, try to do some good yourself, and focus on that rather than, you know, getting all tied up this sense that it's all coming down, because I think we can push back. That's my hope.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, man. Brother, thank you so much for coming on. I love talking to you. I can't wait to listen to your podcast. One more time, just tell the audience where they can find you, find your book, and, you know, if they're inclined, get in contact with you.
Sure. Yeah. Go to globalcollapsebook.com. Again, you can order a signed copy there if you're in the U.S. You can also get links to Amazon and everywhere. There's a contact us page. I read everything that comes through there. I promise, you want to get in touch with me, just fill out that contact form. I'll get back to you. Speaking of that, I just talked, I've been going back and forth with a guy in Norway who heard me on a podcast and wanted to get a signed copy. And, you know, I said, I don't ship out of the country. And I really don't, unless somebody wants it really bad, because the price is so high. But he said, and I told him the cost, the shipping cost, you know, is like $36 to ship it to Norway. And on top of the cost of the book, he said, I don't care, I want one. So I shipped it to him. But yeah, I mean, you know, we're just trying to get this word out. So whatever it takes, that's what I'm about. So I would encourage people, go to the website, globalcollapsebook.com. You can read a chapter for free. Click the read link. You can read a chapter for free. You can also click on another link there on the read link. It'll take you to a button where you can hear the intro. I've narrated that. You can get the whole book, you know, as an audiobook too, if you want. So one way or another, get the word out, get the book if you can. Help me spread the word. That's what it's all about.
Well, I will definitely be getting an autographed copy from you, so expect to see my name pop across. But again, thank you so much. One more thing. When's your podcast? When's it debut?
Yeah, it's going to be later in December 2025. I think we can't be more than 2 weeks away from it. I haven't put the date out because I'm working with iHeartRadio, and we're putting together the final version of the initial two podcasts, and then I'm going to have guests on each of the 11 chapters, 11 pillars, I should say. They're going to be individual podcasts. We're lining up guests, but just keep going to the globalcollapsebook.com. I'll have an announcement once I finally have a date, but it'll be coming out soon. So I hope people check it out.
Now, the name is the same as your book, or is it a different name?
Yeah, it's going to be the Globalist Plan to Collapse Everything podcast.
Perfect. Well, thank you again so much, brother. I wish you the best of luck, and God bless.
All right. Thanks so much. Great being with you.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
We've hit the 0 hour. That's a wrap on this week's transmission. New episodes drop weekly, so stay tuned and don't miss the next signal. Follow, subscribe, and spread the word. You've been listening to Zero Signal. We're out.